Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Off-Centered Outdoors Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Dockstetter, along with my partner in crime.
Yeah, you're a normally barefooted.
Three episodes in a row, you got shoes on.
Yep, barefooted midget stuffing moron.
You're a midget stuffing moron, okay?
No. Midget animal stuffing moron.
There you go.
My mind was blown because everything isn't exactly how it was. So yeah,
we're a little different setup today.
I got locked up for a second.
Got a better camera going. So
yeah. Whoa. No kidding.
Yeah, well, we're big timing now. Hopefully this actually works and I'm not pissing in the wind like I did last week.
Hopefully your investor, you know, it goes right so we don't get our arms broke or nothing.
Yeah, no kidding.
We have a sketchy investor.
Yeah. I'm going to start today's episode by apologizing to the Canon man. The last week's episode, we had some audio difficulties. Somebody, not naming names, screwed things up. So,
yeah, at least it wasn't me.
Hey.
Nobody's happier than me when someone else screws up.
Nobody blamed but myself. So, yeah, I think we're in business today. So we'll see how it goes. If this doesn't go up next week, then you'll know it was not good.
By the way, since we have to redo Canon Man's episode, maybe someone can send you some questions like how to make a perpetual motion machine out of parts in your garage or stuff for a Canon Man to answer.
Yeah, no, we'll...
How to make a thermal nuclear reactor in your backyard or something.
There you go. He's our very own Rocket City redneck, even though he's not in Rocket City.
Nope.
But yeah, so hopefully you guys are seeing this. And yeah, send us some questions to ask the Canon Man.
That's too bad, because I hope we can do that episode about the mystery hole, you know,
yeah, we'll
again, because that was awesome.
Yeah, I uploaded the audio of last week's episode. The YouTube version is not up because it was just garbage. You couldn't hear anything.
Oh, so you could hear on the...
You can kind of hear on the regular podcast. So yeah, check out the Spotify episode or Apple Podcast episode from last week, and hopefully that, like I said, it's not the best sound quality on the phone call, but it is what it is. Baby steps. It's a learning process.
It is, because we're just two guys.
Yep.
Dos idiosos, taxidermists.
Absolutely, we're taxidermists.
We're bilingual. We're idiots in all languages.
We are not digital creators by trade, so... Bear with us, and we'll do what we can to make it right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we have fun anyway.
Absolutely.
And speaking of fun, today's... well, first of all, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Chucky?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Feeling, starting to stack some boards up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it looks like you made some progress in here since last time I was here.
Yeah, because it was just a little bit too long on that visit.
Yeah.
Not with the granddaughter, but too long. Not... putting stuff together.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I had a visit from Kevin over the weekend, which is always, I mean, beyond entertaining. God bless that guy.
Yeah.
Freaking hilarious. But what I enjoy about him is there's not a lot of, well, see, you're a young man, you know, and he's been doing taxidermy, again, sadly, longer than you've been alive.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of guys I can talk to about way back, you know, in the mid 70s, early, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
That remember stuff, and they know things. Like, I didn't know that Lyons and O'Haver guy was a professional gymnast, you know?
Oh, wow.
Opened in San Francisco for either Dean Martin or... what's the other guy? Frank Sinatra. What's the other guy? The mafioso guy. And all of that, you know. It's just so random to me.
Interesting.
Things that taxidermists do. Well, like Kevin is a professional harmonicist and plays with... He's played on Merle Haggard albums.
Oh,
he's played on... Yeah, all this crazy...
That's cool.
And then I go, why are you doing this? Oh, I don't... You know, because he's Kevin.
I suppose it's hard for the harmonica to pay the bills some days.
Well, it is... more now, but he's in some band that if I was smart, I'd write it down. But it's just interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting, you know, the creative. And we got into talking about, I forget who was on the radio, and he was saying, man, them guys that play guitar like that, that go to some other part of their brain.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, just weird. I don't know. It's just interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. That's cool.
So
you learn something new every day.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Speaking of guys you can talk to about back in the day, we might have to make a field trip up to your buddy Diaz's house here pretty soon.
Okay.
They're getting ready to move and sell and all that stuff, and he's got a barn full of crap for us to go through.
No kidding. Where are they moving to?
I'm not sure. We didn't get too deep into that conversation. I had some cat business to talk with him.
Exactly. So, did you get anywhere on that?
Yeah. Not really, but
I think it's Stassi we need to talk
actually,
to.
Actually, it wasn't really that part. Oh, it was okay. Something else, but yeah, that too.
Yeah. All right.
But yeah, I'll call Steve later and see. I'll pick his brain on that too. But I think we came to a conclusion on where everything's going to go. So I think we're okay.
Good. Good. But yeah, I wouldn't mind taking a field trip and seeing Diaz.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of goodies we can go through. He said he's got a roll of ear liner material we can have. And
no kidding.
A whole bunch of shit.
We got stall on that old. Thanks for bringing up that dumb, awful subject.
Projects from the past.
Oh, my God. But we need like three of us, man.
I know.
We got all new molds. We got all everything.
Mm-hmm.
All we need is...
Yeah, he was telling me how he was making ear liners and... Yeah, that's how you do it, Mark.
Oh, okay. Did he reinvent it, or did he, like Mark does?
He made it sound like it was his idea to use those the Bondo molds to wrap your plastic around. But everybody, as long as you come to the same destination,
I know.
I suppose it doesn't matter.
I love Mark because it's just like you'll launch into the Mark. I remember we were there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I love about. Remember, I was standing next to you that day.
But no, he's a great dude. This weekend he's got some dog trials to go to, and then
I just hope he's happy because you know
he sounded like he had a lot less weight on his shoulders yesterday when I talked to him than the last time I talked to him.
So he got all that other business probably worked out. For you guys that don't know, we get sideways on here sometimes because these people we've known them and known their stories but that. Because we hang out with them kind of people that don't let adversity get them down.
Yeah. Well, try to, anyways.
Yeah, try to, you know.
So, yeah, that'll be a fun little field trip. Maybe we'll do a car cast on that one.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he had that place set up. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll take all the gear and we'll just see if he wants to sit down and record with us for an hour.
I think he will.
Lord knows he likes to talk. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I've done
damn
a couple, three of them. Yeah, Porgy. Oh,
I can say that because I are part one. So,
no, you remind me of Finazzo at the show. The Porgy. See, that's what I mean. I go back so far as we had some crazy ass. I mean, if you didn't want talk about, I don't know what would happen if there was wokeness back then.
Oh yeah,
geez, talk about. You know,
mm-hmm.
Because it got deep and it got crazy, man.
I can imagine.
You know?
Yeah, I can imagine just hanging around and hearing the stories I've heard. I can only imagine what real life was like.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
there's like I always say, there's three sides to every story, mine, yours, and what really happened.
So. Exactly. So
I can only imagine what really happened.
I don't know. It was crazy. Like that time, some guy come in with a hooker he found in the parking lot because he... You know, I don't even know. As in the lobby, and there was Tony, and I don't want to name too many names.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't as bad as I'm making it sound, but it was just hilarious.
No doubt. That's awesome.
Because she thought he had money because he had a Ferrari. This one guy.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, God, you know how he got the Ferrari, I forget, but, you know, none of us have that kind of money, so.
No, we can pretend, though.
Yeah, that's just so much fun. Well, okay, well, what else is going on? You got some projects stacked over there.
Yeah, I got a couple deer I got to stick together. Last week was kind of a screwed up week. Next week's going to be a screwed up week, so I'm going to try to hammer out everything I can this week.
Last weekend you had some fun. You went to some concert or something.
Yeah, and then... for Christmas we bought Levi tickets for Cody Johnson, his favorite country singer. So we went down to Anaheim to the Honda Center and watched that. That was a good time. And since we were down there, you, right next door to the Mouse House, you got to go pay him a visit.
The Mouse House.
Yeah. Yeah, so we went and spent the day at Disneyland and came home, and now it's back to normal life, allegedly.
Yeah. Well, today I'm a little bit excited because we're going to have some levity because...
Yeah, I got a special phone call guest today. Hopefully I got this technology figured out.
Yeah, well, anyway, he's... talk about adversity.
Yeah.
The last 2-3 years have been brutal, but he's... well, I got to say, he's like my favorite comedian friend because mm-hmm. he's... one of my only comedian friends, but you may have seen him in, boy, let's see if I can screw up his intro like I do. I don't want to give away too much because hopefully he'll like really pick on me and gets really funny. But yeah. He's been on 3 or 4 TV, movies,
mm-hmm.
and he's been on a Robert De Niro films, and he's done like almost 7,000 stand-up shows.
Wow.
And, but the funny part is he used to be a Long Island cop.
Oh, nice.
I can't tell that story. It'll wreck it, man, yeah, but it's no funny.
So, yeah, if there's any sensitive ears that watch this, I suggest either pulling the stick out of your ass and enjoying yourself for a few minutes, or you can...
Yeah, because we don't know what his first words are going to be.
Yeah, you can pause and or fast forward and join us after the phone call. But yeah, so we're going to give John a call and see what happens here. Hopefully it works out. I got my handy little plug. It's plugged into my handy little microphone. I guess we should have done a pre-check on this, but
yeah,
we're flying blind. Hopefully it works out.
Again, and of course, I'm always, as always, I'm ready with the phone number, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
There it is. I got it.
All right, here we go. Plugging in.
Here's that radial engine.
Hitting the call button. See if it works. Hey, I've got ringing.
Me too.
Hello.
Big John.
What's up, Chuck?
How you doing, buddy?
Good. Is there a co-host?
Yes, yep. There is.
Allegedly.
Who's that?
That's my buddy Matt Dockstetter. I don't think you've met him.
No, I only know you by reputation, sir.
All right, your first name?
Matt.
Oh, okay, you got it. That's my son's name.
That should be easy to remember then.
Yeah, I dislike him.
I get that a lot.
Yeah.
All right, what's the theme? Is there a theme?
No,
the theme is you today, buddy, because we need some levity.
Life's too damn serious. We figured we'd call the funniest guy around and see what the hell's going on.
You got it, dude. I'm ready. Is there a start time, or are we already up and running?
We're going.
We're done.
We're cooking, man.
We're right. Like, hey, so good at this, you know? We have no idea what we're doing.
All right. Hey, Chuck.
Yeah?
And Matt, I'm the most important guest you'll ever have.
I like it.
It's nice to meet me. My name is John DeResta.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show, John.
I'll add some fanfare.
You got it.
Yeah. Yeah, we have fanfare on this, but we don't know how to use it yet.
That's all right. You put it in afterwards. Post.
We're going to do our best. Otherwise, you'll have to just pretend.
Got it. Matt, what do you do for a living?
Allegedly, I'm a taxidermist, but I'm
also... Oh, you're a taxidermist, too?
Yes, sir. I'm also an award-winning barbecue chef.
No shit. Do you live in Ojai?
No, I live up in just north Santa Maria.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I do a gig up there, the 805 Event Center.
Oh, okay.
You do?
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, they're starting to do a little bit more and more comedy gigs up there.
Dude, I always thought Ojai was for the rich and famous, for all the producers from Hollywood that have a summer house with, you know, they have the ponytail and the Porsche convertible.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to Chuck's house.
There are exceptions.
And the house to the right is nice, but the left side, I felt like I was at a trading post for Willis and Clark. Lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my.
Yep.
And then there's a stove, an outdoor stove where he cooks venison steaks.
Yeah.
It looked like Bobby and Whitney used that stove for 2 years in a rental apartment.
Damn right.
And then he has two or three things that he calls dogs that I can't even tell what race they are.
Yeah, they run around in one of them hamster balls across the backyard.
One of them looks like an overgrown rat.
That's Chuck.
Yes, me.
That's
yeah.
Chuck. Chuck is half rat, half human, born in the subway of New York.
There you go.
Yeah, you tried to shoot me that time, but what happened to your gun?
It was rusted shut.
But I think that's that's a true story, though, right?
Well, here's what happened. I was a New York City transit cop, Matt, for 12 years in the subway. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of stories with the gun, but the very first one is when I went to the very first week of the police academy in July of 86, the very first week, our company, there was 53 in my company and 2,900 guys in my academy class, but my company went to the range in the Bronx the very first week. So I didn't go to a police academy. I went to an outdoor range for the first week as a cop.
Wow.
And the head instructor was a very funny guy, an old Italian cop, very funny. And we bonded right away. And now in hindsight, I realize why he was so funny. He was in front of a group of cops every day of his life, whether they were rookies or old timers. Every single day he had a live audience. So he was really funny. And we became good friends. His name was Frank Genovese. We became friends through the funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it wind up every year I was supposed to go and shoot my weapon and clean it. The night before, Frank would call me and go, "Hey, John, it's Frank. Don't come in tomorrow. You shot 100. So for 12 years, I never went to the range, and by the end of my career, my gun was so rusted shut, I would have to throw it at a perpetrator.
So what made you... Go ahead.
Chuck, here's another story that I don't remember, and I have a very good memory, but mm-hmm. someone posted it on Facebook about a year ago. All the transit cops have these groups, and they were all... Everybody was telling stories about their weapon, mm-hmm. who shot it accidentally, who lost it, whose wife found it at the barbecue. And someone wrote, John DiResta went to the range once in 12 years. About halfway through, I had to go. And I was told by an old timer, you got to remember, when I got on the job, there was no cell phones. Mm-hmm. There was very few ATMs, like for a debit card. So if you got stuck with an arrest that took two or three full days, you mm-hmm. had no money. You know, your wife, you may have brought $5 to work, and now it's 3 days later, you had no money to eat. So an old-time cop told me you always roll a $5 bill up and slip it into the muzzle of your gun. So if you ever get stuck with no money, you remember, oh, I got $5 in the muzzle of my gun. And the story on the internet was that John DiResta's first shot at the range in 1995 blew apart a $5 bill, and it went all over the place like confetti.
Oh, that's great.
And I don't recall that, but how else could, you know, it's probably true.
There's bound to be some truth to it, I imagine.
That's
and
hilarious.
we didn't even have speed loaders. We had to load bullets one at a time into a revolver. So we had a bullet pouch. We had three pouches that all had six bullets in it. And you had to dump the pouch in your hand and manually put in six bullets. You mm-hmm. dig?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I was so fucking fed up with police. Oh, excuse the language. That's I was so no, fed up with police
we're,
work.
We're rated for F.
Oh, I was so fed up with police work that instead of bullets... For real, I had six pieces of bubble yum in each bullet pouch out on patrol.
And so what made you, well, there's a couple things we'd like to talk about, but first of all, how'd you transgender from, Long Island to Hollywood?
I was always wanted to be a comedian, never had the balls. I had living room balls. You know what that is? Funny in the living room?
Yep.
But I was really funny on the job. I was, hold on, that's my alarm. You guys can hear me, right?
Yep, uh-huh. You're good.
I was really funny on the football team in high school on the job, and I always had living room balls. The one or two times I tried to get up, I would, you know, I was just so nervous. I even tried stand up once or twice, and my heart was pounding. It felt like there was a human being inside my body hitting my rib cage from the inside with a sledgehammer, and I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I just put it on the back burner. And then I was married. I had two kids, two infants, like a 1 week old and a 1 year old. And I was in the homeless outreach unit. So now at least I was off patrol. I was on a big city bus every night. Me and two other cops would pick up 20, 30, 50 homeless people. We called them clients. We picked up 50 clients. And then as we gave out free food and sandwiches, I would throw a sandwich to each person in a bag and make fun of them. So it was crowd work on a bunch of skulls with rotten teeth that all stunk of dried human piss. And we had regular clients. We picked up guys every single night.
Yeah.
And now not only was it crowd work, I was doing inside jokes. This guy, you know, 4 days ago, he did this, and this guy used to be a stockbroker. You know, now he's eating his own feces. And my partner said, dude, there's a thing called a comedy class. Mike Venkus, he was reading the Village Voice, and he said, there's a thing called a comedy class. You could take an 8-week class. He was reading the ad. You could take an 8-week class and, you know, learn the ins and outs. And there was a big pause, and he goes, I'll pay for it.
Oh, wow.
And it was like a revelation. It was this crazy, weird, like, oh, okay, this was kismet. Maybe if I take a class, I won't be as nervous. I got off at 6 in the morning. I drove home an hour to upstate New York to Harriman, about an hour away. My wife had a crying infant in one arm and a crying toddler in the other arm. And I said, I want to try stand-up. I'm just going to try it. It'll probably take 10 years to even get a paid set. I thought it would take 10 years to get paid.
Yeah.
I said, I just want to try it, and I need your support. And there was a long pause, and Fran said, I want another baby, and I'll support you if you give me another baby. And the decision was made right then, and about an hour or two later at 8 in the morning, I called the comedy class, and just the phone call was a relief off my shoulders. It was like I told my parents I was a homosexual. Like Chuck had to do.
Yeah.
And I took the comedy class, and the very first set, when you graduate, Chuck might know this, when you graduate, you invite your friends and family, right, and it's a legit show.
Mm-hmm.
And on that show, I made $4. So here, I thought I would take 10 years to make a dollar, and I got $2 a head for whoever showed up, and my brother and sister showed up, and I made $4 on set number one.
Nice.
And last night, I did set 6,891.
Wow. 31
and a half years.
Another $4.
And that's funny. And today, at the shop, I'm building a little stoop. I'm a woodworker. I'm building, they call it a kitchen step, for Chuck so he could reach the tea bags and the coffee cups.
Perfect.
Thank you. And I don't know, man. I could probably have you on for like 3 hours. But when I first met you, I was trying to be a host, right? And what'd you say? Who knew? You went through your career, and who knew? How'd you say it? Who knew it would all end tonight or something?
This is the last show I'm ever doing. I have to follow a midget in a Vietnam vet jacket that's holding a dog in a dirty bag.
Yep. Who knew?
No, I always respected what you and Tom did. I always thought it was very funny.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, for sure, dude. And anyone that has a live animal in a pouch while they're doing stand-up is funny.
I appreciate that. It was terrifying. People don't know. I mean, I did it because I was so terrified to just talk, believe it or not.
But I got to tell you, I've seen a lot of stand-up shows, you know, good, bad. Like last night was the worst, dude. I do a lot of really second-rate shows just to stay practiced.
Mm-hmm.
And last night was the worst. It was a wrestling comedy night, and every comedian that went up had a funny story about wrestling or imitated a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had a fake wrestling match, and you know, I had to wait like 2.5 hours in a cold little nightclub. The heat wasn't on. And but so I've seen a lot of shows, but what I'm going to say is I never saw that in you. I always thought someone that was up there just being funny and reacting to Tom.
Really? I appreciate
it. Yeah, without a doubt.
Wow. Yeah, but you were like just hilarious for some reason, and I appreciated all the I don't know, I just like when you cap on me, it was just funny to me. And
no, dude, actually, you said something even only a week ago when you called me about something else.
Yeah.
You said you know a woman that might need some shelf units.
Yeah, yeah.
And we only spoke for a minute or two, and at the very end, you very sincerely said, thank you for making fun of me. It was really funny, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird.
I forgot that, man. I say a lot of shit, ask Matt, because, and I don't remember, you know, but...
No, here's what happens with comedy. You guys might not know this. Chuck will know it, but if I identify it, it becomes more clear. That comedy lends itself to people bonding very quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very quickly. You know, you bond with an audience, and then on top of it, that specific area, that city, that comedy club, there's always people that you bond with, and I bonded really quick with you, with... Armpit, mm-hmm. Jeff Davis.
You got to tell that story in a minute.
Well, Chuck's best friend is a handsome taxidermist, heavy metal tattoo duck hunter. He's an interesting guy. And Jeff, to me, looks like Brad Pitt if he became homeless and had to give men mouth sex in an alleyway in Lompoc. And instead of calling him Brad Pitt, I called him Armpit.
I like it.
And not only did the three of us bond, but Armpit, my wife passed away about 2 years ago. My wife, Fran, of 32 years, went to the big flea market in the sky. And Jeff Davis was very nice. Calls, emails, really nice.
Yeah, Jeff is a hell of a guy, no matter what anybody says.
Yeah, I mean, he gets the brutal brunts of our jokes a lot, but he's got a heart the size of...
Oh, he's a good guy. He's and I don't want to get too personal, but he has the ability to see to the other side.
Hmm.
I don't know if you guys know that. And he got a message or two from Fran and gave it to me.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, for real.
For real?
Yeah.
Well, now I'm scared.
Yeah, I'm just glad the message didn't come from Mike Eaton, the bus driver.
Yeah, Jim Eaton.
Oh, Jimmy. As it was coming out of my mouth, I said, I don't know his first name.
Right, Jim. Jim is a – Jim get – poor Jim. I mean, he's a good guy, too.
Yeah.
No, he's a good guy, too. I know he has some health issues, and he's and I think he went through a bad divorce.
Oh, yeah.
He's been going through a lot of stuff lately.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but he's a good guy. You meet so many interesting characters when you do this. So tell us about some of your – Hollywood crap you did.
All right, so I started doing stand-up, and I got the bug right away. Like, as soon as I did that graduating class and I made $4 and I got laughs, I was
hooked.
I was like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I started doing the open mics, and I was doing only about three a month. And then one night I walked into a comedy club. Again, you guys remember I said it would probably take 10 years to make a dime. I made the $4, and then I did about 15, 20 open mics. And a friend of mine, I walked in a comedy club, and a guy was on a phone, and he said, hey, are you a comedian? I said, I am. He said, you want to do a gig tomorrow night in the Bronx? I said, sure. He goes, it pays $80 for 10 minutes. And I was like, at the time, I was doing security work, woodworking, and making $10 an hour when I wasn't a cop. I was always broke, always check to check. For years, because we had three kids right in a row.
Yeah.
And my wife couldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my wife had an unusual job. She had a security job. She laid on the couch to make sure no one stole it. And we never lost one. So I said $80 for 10 minutes. So I go to this, it's like a Knights of Columbus in Throgs Neck, Bronx, and I get there, and there's nowhere to park, nowhere. So it's really crowded, like they do comedy once a year. And there had to be 150 cars parked on the grass, on the street, double, triple, quadruple parked, because they knew no one was leaving till midnight, till after the show. And it's right, if you guys know Throgs Neck in the Bronx, it's literally at the end of the Triborough Bridge. Like one of the bridges, when you come off it, you're in the Bronx, you're in Throgs Neck. Okay. And I got up and it was really crowded. It wasn't an open mic. It was my first real stand-up show. And I said, hey, thank you guys for having me. There's plenty of parking. And that got a laugh. The first thing I said was, there's plenty of parking. And I said, in my mind, I said, if I can't park, they can't park. So I did a little comedic math. Mm-hmm. I said, there's plenty of parking. And as they were laughing, I said, I had to park in Queens and walk over the fucking bridge. Another, and just as I got that first or second big laugh, a guy's walking past me holding a tray of beers. And he looks like, you guys remember the show Laverne and Shirley?
Yeah.
Remember Lenny and Squiggy?
Uh-huh. And the Squig Tones?
Well, Lenny had the blonde hair and Squiggy right. was the little short guy.
Right.
And this guy's walking past me right in front of me so everyone sees him. He's holding the beers and they're already laughing at the bridge. And I go, look at this. I couldn't remember which one was Lenny or Squiggy. Mm-hmm. Just like Mike Eaton and whatever. What's his first name?
Jim.
Jim, so watch this. I said, look at this Lenny and Squiggy looking motherfucker. And it wind up, he looked like the blonde one, but I didn't know which was Lenny and Squiggy, so I used both. Mm-hmm. It got a huge laugh. I wind up, they gave me $80, and I was like, okay. And when I came home and showed my wife, I just made $80 in 10 minutes. This, you know, it's on. You know what I mean? And, here's the funny story. The next day, I never had permission to have a second job. When you're a New York City cop, you have to have permission to have a second job. You have to fill out a form. And I was doing open mics, so I wasn't making any money. I come into the homeless outreach unit the next day, and my sergeant from a different tour, who I never talked to, says to me, you come in my office, with a dead straight look on his face. Because you got to remember, when you're doing comedy, it's more out there than being a security guard. You know, people see it. Mm-hmm. And he sits me down. He goes, did you do a comedy show in the Bronx last night? I said, I did. He goes, let me tell you something. That Lenny and Squiggy looking motherfucker is my brother-in-law. And you were fucking hysterical. When are you coming back? Hold on. So that was set 20 or 30. And then I have these all written down. Yeah, set 33. Mm-hmm. Set 33. It's 175 notebooks. Mm-hmm. Set 33 was now. I from Long Island. I moved upstate New York to get away from, you know, relatives and in-laws and everything. And we moved about 50 miles north of Manhattan. So I would visit Long Island. It was a 60 or 70 mile ride. But now that I was a stand-up comedian, I booked a show in Long Island. And everyone came out. It like there was no internet, but like wildfire. John DeRest is a comedian. John DeRest is a comedian. John DeRest is a comedian. I book a show in Rockville Center, Long Island. You guys ever heard of Rockville Center?
No.
All right. It's the home of Dave Attell, Amy Schumer.
Okay.
Joan Jett. And
as a comedian, I should know this, right?
The guy in Goodfellas, Henry Hill. When Henry Hill was in the mob in the movie, he lived in Oceanside, Long Island.
Okay.
I mean, Rockville Center. So it wind up, I got $5 ahead. Instead of $2 ahead, I got $5 ahead. I made $253 cash. I had Fran with me. That was the first show she ever came to. I had a killer set. Again, I had a lot of people in the audience knew me, so I had it loaded. But I wind up doing really well. Set 33, and it was in a hotel, and we were going to drive home, and the guy in the hotel said, dude, you were so funny, you get a free room.
Nice.
And I laid in that hotel bed in Rockville Center, set 33, and cried tears of joy that now this really can work. Like, this is like, you know, now it's $253 for a 13-minute set.
Yeah.
And the guy that followed me bombed so horrifically, his tan khaki pants developed a urine stain as he said goodnight.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God.
So then on set 72, I did a bringer show where you bring friends and relatives to Caroline's Comedy Club, the biggest club in Manhattan.
Yeah.
and they videotaped the show. And I brought a lot of audience members, and my two brothers were in the toy business. And they had a fellow couple of friends that had a company that made a lot of money on the Sky Dancer. Did you guys ever hear of the Sky Dancer?
I think so.
It was a toy where you pulled the string, and it was literally the wings would spin, and it would take flight. Yeah, it was one of the first toys that ever took flight. So a lot of young girls bought them, and they would, you know, you pulled the string, and it would go 15 feet in the air and then flop to the ground. Yeah, and they had extra money. So they said, hey, we're looking to get in the TV business. Is your brother's stand-up act worthy of a sitcom? And they said, hey, just by chance, tomorrow night at Caroline's, he's doing a big show on Broadway in Manhattan, you know, not in Long Island, not upstate New York.
Yeah.
So I did set 72, sold out, killed it. Now I come out smiling with heavy metal, with the horns up, with the big, I got big fake teeth. But back then, that set, I came out super straight. I didn't smile. I let the whole audience calm down, and I just said, I'm not having a good day. I tried that phone sex, and the receiver got stuck in my ass. And that joke hit. I had a hold for like 40 seconds, and I had them. And the catchphrase at the time was, thank you, because my dad was a garage sailor. Uh-huh. So everything he got, look at this, $1, thank you. This is a real metal lunchbox. This is a Kiss lunchbox from 1978, $1, thank you. So the catchphrase that night was thank you, but one audience member who was a friend of mine from high school kept yelling it out at the perfect time. Like, in other words, I would do it, they would laugh, then he would do it.
Yeah.
By accident. We didn't set it up. So that night went so well. When I came off stage, I said to my brother, are John and Anthony here from AG Entertainment? Are they here? They go, they left already. They loved it. Oh. Like, they just came, saw my set, and left.
Wow.
And they said to me, call tomorrow morning. Call them tomorrow morning first thing. They want to talk. And I lived 50 miles north of Manhattan and was so broke, I did not have long distance. So to call 212, I lived in 914, to call 212 area code, I had to scratch the change off the floor of my minivan and go to Grand Union and call from a payphone.
Wow.
And they said, hey, we want to develop a one-man show that we'll put in a little theater. And the theme obviously is going to be, you know, civil servant. You know, when you become a civil servant, it's not the greatest thing. And when you have three kids in 33 months and a wife, it's not the American dream. It's a fucking nightmare. You know, you're broke all the time. You're eating cat food, you know, and you get to go stand in the subway for 12 hours at a time, all alone with a gun that's rusted shut. And it all smells like piss, and it's lonely and scary.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm answering Chuck's question, how we got to L.A. Over the next 3 years, they sent me to acting school. They assigned me a director, a producer. And every time I went out and did a set, the three of us got back together once a week and said, okay, this joke works. This works. I'm in the homeless outreach unit. You know how cops have all those medals over their badge if they got in a shootout or arrested somebody?
Uh-huh.
I was in the homeless outreach unit. You know, we give out sandwiches. I had one medal over my badge. It said over 1 million served. So these are the type of jokes that we were developing. And then December of 96 was the opening of Beat a Subway Cops Comedy. They titled it, not me. I didn't like the title. I wanted to call it You Ride, We Hide.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the theme of the transit police, You Ride, We Hide.
Yeah.
Just like today.
Right. But we called it Beat a Subway Cops Comedy. We were supposed to just do 2 weeks and try and get, you know, TV executives in. And I took a two-week leave from the police department. I officially resigned. I had no benefits, no backing, no legal if I got in trouble for 2 weeks. And it wind up, the 14 shows that we did got such a buzz in and around New York City that they extended it.
Wow.
And they extended it. Then they extended it. And I'm running in every single night at 8 o'clock and doing a one-man show. And I had to go on duty. I had to go back to work. I had to go on duty after the 2 weeks. I went on duty at 9:30 p.m. So I'm getting finished with a one-man show, running through the lobby past TV executives and agents to go to work as a cop.
Wow.
So we did 100 in what was supposed to be 14 shows. We did 181 performances of Beat a Subway Cop's Comedy. And it got a lot of heat, and a lot of Hollywood people got involved, and I wind up signing a big sitcom deal with Disney for a couple of hundred grand.
No way.
Yeah, so I remained a cop with a TV deal for 11 months. And then finally it all came together, and I resigned from the now I was NYPD. I don't know if the plot thickens. The NYPD merged with the transit police and took us over. So now I was a New York City cop, totally different police department, and I resigned in March of 98. My wife and then three young kids moved to Hollywood in June of 98. And when I got off the plane, the agent said, I got good news and bad news. Now, you got to remember, I just quit a job. Lost my pension. You had to have 20 years for a pension. I had 12. And the agent said, look, I got good news and bad news. I said, go ahead. She said, the bad news is the guy that hired you at Disney has moved on to UPN. That network they tried to make. Do you guys remember UPN?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He's the new head of UPN. And Disney, the company, doesn't want your project. That's the bad news. She said, the good news is the new head of UPN wants to make your sitcom the key show on the new network.
Wow.
So I had a sitcom that ran 17 episodes on UPN, and UPN was formerly the African American network till I got on. And it's funny, the African American audience didn't want to watch the white jovial cop.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine.
Yeah, I don't know why.
And my sitcom titled Duresta became the lowest rated sitcom in the history of TV. And that'll get you a gig with Chuck and his dog in a bag.
Sounds like it. Now we know the path to get there.
In a haunted hotel with Mark Eaton giving out the tickets.
And also, people don't know you're a master woodworker.
I am. Now watch what happened. So when I moved to LA, I had the sitcom, and we were doing well with the sitcom money. The sitcom got canceled. And then luckily enough, I got into the movie 15 Minutes with Robert De Niro. You guys heard of him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Vaguely.
That was a decent payday. And now I'm in a movie with De Niro. Then I got into the movie Miss Congeniality with no audition because of the New York accent.
Oh, nice.
And that was a decent payday. And I thought, when you have a sitcom, when you did The Tonight Show with Jay Leno as a regular guest, not as a comedian, as a guest on the couch and killed.
Yeah.
And then you're in a movie with De Niro, and then you're in a movie with Sandra Bullock. There is no way this could ever end. How could it end? I'm blessed. And sure enough, my wife and I was spending the money like a black guy with a hit record. And then 9/11 happened.
Ah.
And the phone completely stopped ringing. How can we be funny? We can't make any projects. 3,000 people died. And the combination of the lavish spending, the rental at $3,800 a month, and that's 25 years ago, $3,800 a month with a built-in pool. It all caught up to me, and we went completely broke.
Wow.
Not a dime in the world. Completely broke. And I said to Fran, all right, do we move back to New York, move in with my mom when everyone thinks I'm rich and famous because they only see the repeats of these movies?
Yeah.
or do we stay? And my wife said, I'm not fucking moving back to New York. You better figure it out. So I called my parents, and they co-signed a $30,000 loan. And we moved to a cheaper house that was infested with rats. Chuck's relatives. And now I had to start over.
Hollywood.
And now I had to start over. And I'll tell you real quick how I got back. I was always a woodworker, and I always knew how to do rustic furniture. And it never, ever, hold on 1 second. I got to flush the toilet. That's not part of the act. While I was telling those stories, I did a number four. It stinks. All right. So I, Chuck, I never even thought of being a woodworker. I started to do the road as a comedian. You know, now I'm getting on an airplane, flying to Alaska, Milwaukee, Florida, Texas, New York, New Jersey, Idaho, Vegas. You know, every now and then I would take my wife to Vegas or to Reno. At least we liked it. It was fun.
Yeah.
And I never, ever, ever for the next year thought of doing woodwork. It just wasn't, you know, it was a side job for my whole life. And one day where we lived in the new rental that had rats across the street, they ripped down the whole facade of this apartment building. And the whole facade was planks of pine that were 15 inches wide by 10 feet tall.
Wow.
And they were sunburned for 30 years. And there had to be 150, 200 planks. And my wife said, look at all that junk. They're just leaving it? And I said, wow, if I was a woodworker, that wood would be worth 10 bucks a foot. And my wife said, on that note, I need a little key table. You know, when you walk in the house, you just throw your keys and your cell phone?
Yeah.
I went, I got one plank. I borrowed a handsaw. I'd had no tools. I borrowed a handsaw. I went and bought a 2x4, cut it into, you know, 24 inches times 4 at the lumber yard, and built a table. And that was it. I bought a palm sander for 20 bucks and sanded it. And a woman next door to me, an old, beat up old Hollywood star, she kept bothering me to get a script to Sandra Bullock. I said, look, I got my own problems. I'm broke. I said, you know, I don't know. I haven't seen Sandra Bullock in 3 years. I don't know her. And finally, she did it the fifth time. She showed up with a script, and she put her arm in my front door. And she put her foot at the bottom so I couldn't shut the door on her.
Yeah.
And she said, can you get this script to Sandra Bullock? And I said, I can. I don't even know her. And then she goes, where did you get that little table? I said, I made it. She goes, can you make me one? And how much? And I looked over her shoulders at the 50 old things sticking up in the air. And I went, $100 for a table. And she goes, I'll take two. Let me go get you the money.
Wow.
And that's how my wood business started, for real. I would have never thought of doing it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, and now it's just grown into a, you know, obviously a bit of a business that keeps me from having to go to Alaska, Milwaukee, Hawaii. You know, most of my gigs are either locally I'm working on it, or if I do get on a plane, it's more fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's once every 6 or 8 months, and it's like a vacation. You know, there's a thing about doing the road as a comedian. There's only so many crab fishing shows you could jerk off to. When you start having sexual feelings for Sig Hansen.
Oh.
When your orgasm counts on what the crab count was in the last cage. No. So now I'm out here. I do the woodwork. I do 3 or 4 sets a week. Most of them are in really shitty back rooms, which makes me funnier.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then, since I saw Chuck, I flew to 2 different places. I flew to Novi, Michigan, right outside of Detroit for New Year's Eve.
Mm.
And about 2 or 3 months before that, I did Kenosha, Wisconsin. Do you guys know Kenosha?
Heard of it.
Mm-hmm. It's where who was that young poor guy that shot 3 people in a riot?
Oh,
Kyle. What was his name?
Kyle Rittenhour.
Yeah.
Do you know what John DeResta and Kyle Rittenhouse have in common?
What?
They both crossed state lines to kill. In Kenosha.
Perfect.
And then last, I talk about keep Ian in the business. All these weekend gigs just usually pay one fee. You know, $1,500, $2,000 plus air, you know, $1,800 and a hotel. You know, there's a varied slide.
Yeah.
But last May 20th, I did a gig in Long Island. So 30 years into stand-up, I finally got a cut of the door. And in one show, I did get a cut of the door on those, you know, the $4 and the the $4 and the $253. Now, 30 years later was the first time I got a big cut of the door, and I made $1,750 on one show.
Wow.
So now that's keeping me in the game. Because now I'm going back to that same club in March.
Nice.
And instead of one show on a Saturday, I'm doing like two on a Friday, two on a Saturday. They're making a big deal, and I get a cut of the door. And I get a guarantee of $400 for the weekend. But with this sliding scale, I could make up to $7,000 or $8,000.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
you can't beat that.
And now I'm single. My wife went to the big flea market in the sky.
Yeah.
You know, not to get too serious, but she's in a better place.
Absolutely.
Then again, so am I.
What did she say to you right when she was dying? You said she grabbed your collar and pulled you to
her? I want you to go on and be funny and get as much open mic pussy as you can. And make sure you put that fucking midget Chuck Testa in his place. And talk about his oven from Deliverance with the wet meat. With the dried out wet squirrel meat that he eats.
Oh, that's awesome.
But we could have you on for hours, man.
Listen, now I'm single, but I had one girlfriend, one young girlfriend. She was 32 and I was 58. And a lot of guys said, look, she's not too young for you. I go, she's 5 days older than my daughter. So that makes it okay. And an unusual thing happened.
What?
I'm 59 years old. I'm old school. I came up in the 70s and 80s with the women.
Right.
I'm used to a pube patch. I'm used to a magic triangle.
Right. Yeah.
I'm used to a fuzzy – we called it a fuzzy New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm used to a Camarillo Brillo, like Frank Zappa would say.
Right.
At least a Gaza Strip.
Right.
From the river to the sea.
Right.
She got all naked in the hotel. I couldn't wait. 32 years, I'm going to get some strange. And she had no hair. I said, how old are you? It looks like your pussy has cancer. I didn't know whether to eat it or start a GoFundMe.
God damn you, John.
It looks like Jada Pinkett Smith. Is that the way they look now?
Apparently it is, John.
Has my whole life been a lie?
Yes. In fact, one of those Playboy girls said, you know what they used to call the old hairy, you know, units? Power muffs.
Yep.
Power muff.
Yeah, used to power
muff. Oh, I like that. Look, the final thing I said, I said, look.
I stole it, so.
Look, Adrian. Her name was Adrian. I said, I got to be honest, I couldn't wait to eat that. Now it looks like it's going to eat me.
Oh, John, and how are you feeling, buddy?
I'm okay. Thank God. My health is a little jacked up, but I woke up today. You know, I'm doing my thing. And hey, now that I'm single and I'm remotely famous, I think I'm going to wait for someone famous. I'm going to wait. Sandra Bullock is single. And she was in two movies with me, and she knows I'm a good guy, but she hasn't seen me since I'm skinny and got tan.
Right.
I'm waiting for Sandra Bullock. I'm waiting for the girl that's got a talk show. What's her name? She was in the movie E.T. Was she in E.T.?
Oh, Drew Barrymore?
I'm waiting for Drew Barrymore, Sandra Bullock, Valerie Bertinelli lives in my neighborhood. She's single.
Oh, wow.
Or Dylan Mulvaney.
I hear he's not doing much these days, or she.
It's exactly what I want. I want a woman that has no tits, no pussy, and a dick. That's all you can eat. Oh, I would definitely suck his dick.
For the story, if nothing else.
Yeah, dude. Hey, listen, I'm such a huge heavy metal fan, Matt. On that note, for the story, I'm such a huge heavy metal fan. 50 years of Black Sabbath. I owe Ozzy Osbourne a blowjob. Do you know that?
Yeah, I'm sure you're not the only one.
Listen, and I'm not even gay. I'm just such a huge Black Sabbath fan, and I can offer Ozzy a blowjob. Do you know why?
Why is that?
He can't get hard.
Yeah.
If that son of a bitch can't get a hard on, I don't care. You can give him drugs, shoot it up. It's dead as a doornail. However, if it did get hard, and I did give Ozzy a blowjob, do you know why it would make the news?
How's that?
Because I'd bite the head off of his back.
Uh-huh. It's probably like chewing bubblegum at this point.
Fucking A. All right. Any other questions?
John, I just appreciate you coming on, and not enough time. But
Chuck, are you going to do stand-up?
Remember what I was telling you? If it could be fun again.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Or you might have to find other venues.
Right. And I'm not really, you might not know this about me. I'm kind of agoraphobic,
You'll have to put a show on.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. That's another reason.
That's probably why you grew into a semi-human, 4.5 feet.
Yep. Right. That's it. 4.5 feet. Hey, I do qualify as a dwarf, and I'm damn proud of it, man.
Listen, you could live in a dog cage.
I could. But no, I guess they did a show Friday. I don't know how it went at the airport.
Where?
At the Santa Paula Airport.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking of calling Mike Eaton and asking how it went.
Chuck, you know what you are? You're half human, half ladybug.
I don't know.
All right, guys.
Listen, I'll text you, man. Thank you so much for coming on, buddy.
Send me a copy.
Nice and one day I will send you. And where can they find you on?
You got it. I'm at John DiResta on Instagram. JohnDiResta at John DiResta. I also have DiResta West Coast, all one word, on Instagram, and on Facebook I'm John DiResta. And thank you guys. Chuck, I love you.
Oh, man, me too.
You always remind me of my dad.
Was that good or bad?
Well, if you molest me next time we see, we'll solidify it.
Thank you.
$1.
$1, right. Thank you. See you later,
John. Have a good one, brother.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was fun.
Oh, my God. That was a better night.
No, that was great.
Guys, you see, I did meet some real comics, you know, you hear the guy, and then you go, the other guy says, oh, I can't book you because you don't sell tick bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Well, it is what it is.
Then I got to thinking, he's right, since Digger's gone too, I don't have my dog in the pouch. And
yeah.
That's no reason to stop me, but it just.
No, for sure. If it's something you're passionate about, you might as well keep chugging along.
Well, I'd go up for him and announce him, or that comic assassin guy, because now that's two that said, if you think I was hard on that guy, you know, keep in mind he's my father.
Yeah.
And they call him the comic assassin because he's like Don Rickles, you know. A lot of kids don't know who Don Rickles is. But
no, for sure.
But you got to be able not to take yourself too seriously. Yeah. But that's seriously why I did stand up, was I would just, like, if you talk to me, I would just completely shut down, you know.
Well, this has been a fun episode.
Yeah,
we're at our wrap-up point.
Oh, man, we could go for it. We'll have him back.
Yeah, for sure. We'll have to have him back on for sure.
Doing well, yeah, and he's doing, you know, and like he's a, I call him like an underrated comic, you know, because you don't realize how.
Most definitely.
Just like a lot of the guys we hang out, well, just talking to Kevin, you know, he's played with this guy, that guy, on this record, on that record.
Yep.
You don't
you know, and oh, I didn't even get into that. My son says that he met Cody that helped us bring in the that thing that Motorhead sucks.
Nah.
I have to bring that up next time.
Yeah.
Oh, John will get.
Yeah, them's fighting words.
Yeah, it is. Well, all right, Matt. Talk us out of here.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Off Centered Outdoors. You can follow us everywhere you get your podcasts. That's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. And check me out anywhere on social media at Butchershop Taxidermy. And you can get Chucky on Instagram at Ojai_Valley_Taxidermy.
Yeah, I got a couple things I'm meaning to put up there.
Yep, he's got stuff to do. So
yeah,
now you got to go check it out and give him a like.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Well, we'll catch you on the next one, and hopefully this works, and we'll have another guest coming up.
Yeah,
we've
got another guest, and we'll start lining some up.
Absolutely.
I even got a hunting guest.
Uh-oh.
Lined up. Oh, hey, did you do that podcast?
No, I on the 4th.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
All right.
All right, have a good one, everybody.
See you next time.
Have a good one.